So I'm going to talk about some ongoing work modeling the late stages of terrestrial planet formation in binary star systems. And this is Elisa Quintana's thesis. It's using a code that was written by John Chambers on the basis of some equations derived by Martin Duncan. Fred is Elisa's thesis advisor, and he is adding chaos to the system. And anyway, forward. First of all, planet formation around single stars. Well, you know the state of the art. You know it's not great. So why are we doing the more complicated task of planet formation around binary stars? Well, there are more binary stars than single stars. 3 out of every 2 young stars is a binary or something like that. And so this is important for the abundance of habitable planets. This is what the observers say when you count companions. Yeah.
Okay.
When you count the number of companions a typical star has, the typical star has more than one companion. So triples count twice, and it's 3 out of every 2. That wasn't a mistake by my part.
Did you do your taxes this
week? So, okay, that's why we're doing this. And then we're going to talk about some of the first results we have, which is the nearby binary star system, Alpha Centauri. Then some work on planet formation around very close binary stars, where the planets are forming in a disk surrounding both stars. Some recent work on some other, quote, wide binaries, different parameters than the Alpha Cent AB system. That is the last phase of the study. So you know all this stuff. It's 250 years old. This stuff is over 100 years old. This is a nice picture, though. And you have, see, this proves the beautiful picture, and it proves the core instability model for giant planet formation. See, we have 19 known radial velocity planets in multiple star systems. Now, these are all orbiting one star of a binary. In 3 cases, the binary separation is 20-odd AU. In other cases, it's 100 or more. And so the Alpha Cent system is about the right parameters for 3 of these systems, although we're talking about terrestrial planets, not giant planets. One planet, giant planet, is believed to have been seen around a double, a binary, binary stellar remnant pair, a pulsar, and a white dwarf in a orbit of less, well under a year. The planet's a giant planet with a semi-major axis of around 20 AU. Presumably it formed from a post-main sequence disk from Roche lobe overflow. But we've seen both things have been seen in terms of giant planets in the environments. Let's take a look at the theory of terrestrial planet formation in these environments. And in particular, since we don't know how to reproduce our own solar system in terms of models of terrestrial planet formation, because, as Hal and others have mentioned, it's too hot, too dynamically hot when you don't have some damping little bodies. The other problem is that the disk on a broader scale spreads, and we basically have this is what John Chambers refers to as mass concentration. We have 2 terrestrial planets with almost all the mass. As you dissipate energy, conserve angular momentum, a disk spreads, Lyndon Bell and Pringle type thing. You get this with a planetesimal disk, and you have these 2 planets with a lot of mass near close orbits, 2 planets, just tiny things, don't matter much. So there are 2 problems with the simulations to produce our own solar system where we have the good data. So in order to try and get around this, what we do is we look at the systems, the disks of material, which John Chambers used, which produce the systems that were most like our own solar system. And we use those identical disks and put them in binary star systems. And hopefully, even though we're not modeling exactly what the planet formation is correctly, clearly, because we don't get our solar system right, we're going to be able to find, to first order, the effect of the stellar companion on the ultimate planetary distribution. And chaotic, so it's not stellar companion does this, but a stellar companion can change the distribution of outcomes of planetary systems in orbit about one or both of the stars. And some data on disks in young binary systems. Early stages, dust grains, planetesimals. Well, look at the late stage, the one that can be dynamically modeled, that the binary has a well-defined effect upon. So, basically, we start with the disk that John Chambers found, produced the systems like our solar system, except more dynamically hot and a little bit more spread out. We take Jupiter and Saturn as there to begin with, because most of this occurs on timescales of 100 million years, and the gas was gone, Jupiter and Saturn formed within a few million years. In some cases, we don't use Saturn, and in a few cases, we don't use either of them. In the case where we have a stellar companion at something like 20 AU, which would toss Jupiter out immediately. We don't see the point of putting it in, just to have it tossed out. And we have a modified version of the Mercury integrator, which includes inelastic collisions, symplectic version of the Wisdom-Holman, et cetera, et cetera. And this formed three or four terrestrial planets within 200 million years around a single star. And this is what happened. Star eccentricity versus semi-major axis. Things get stirred up and things get tossed out. And this is a typical outcome. In other words, a typical figure. You do a bunch of simulations. This is the one that looks like you want it to look like our solar system, and you show it. So,
was this really typical? Because the eccentricities were quite low.
The eccentricities were a little lower in this one than in others, but this planetesimal disk distribution, where half the mass was in the big planetesimals and half in the small, produced the things that looked most like our solar system within the ability of these integrators to follow the number of bodies. There's a limit of, couldn't do 500 bodies back then. And now it'd be extremely difficult to do with an integrator like this. But it's about as close as you can get. And even the one I showed you, the mass was more spread out than in our solar system, and the eccentricities, the AMD of the system was higher. So two different integrators, one for orbits around a very close binary, and another one for orbits around one star in a wider binary. And this allows us to essentially not have to worry about this tidal pull so much, because it's taken directly into account, so we don't have to take as small a time step. And in this case, that's very important, because we have a very small time step for the binary, close binary, and we can take a longer time step for the planetesimals moving about it. And we did all sorts of tests, which I can go into if there are questions, but basically the code worked in statistical sense again. This bimodal disk, half the mass in these large embryos, half the mass in body, 10 times as many bodies, a tenth the mass. And I say random eccentricity and inclination within a certain distribution, but this was the same distribution for all. They were chosen randomly, but the same positions, except for one body which was moved by one up to 10 meters along its orbit at the beginning, one of the smaller bodies, just to sample chaos, was used for all these simulations that I'm going to show you. So I see there are certain fonts that don't work. This there's some problem not bringing your own laptop and bring a CD. Anyway, this is the solar system. This is a system like the solar system, the sun, but no giant planets. And you get something significant. You get something in the inner system. It's not that different. You get a body that goes out a little bit farther, but even after a billion years, you get a lot of things that still stay around. The giant planets are having a significant effect on these simulations.
Was there any mass in that junk staying around?
Well, these are the original planetesimals. But this is also a lot further out. This is 2.5 AU.
This is around the sun, right?
This is around the sun without giant planets.
Okay.
So giant planets do affect the process. And the reason I'm saying that is when we get into the other distributions I'm going to show you, it will become important to note that. So this is the parameters. If you haven't visited Alpha Centauri recently, it's a binary of 1.1 solar mass and a 0.9 solar mass star, a little greater than 20 AU, semi-major axis, eccentricity slightly over 0.5, so Perry is about just beyond 10 AU. Because of that, Wiegert and Holman showed that orbits at Jupiter's distance, they get thrown out right away. But within our planetesimal disk, the orbits are all stable. And Merzari and Scholl have a model in which planetesimals can accrete in the Alpha Centauri system. They looked at 5,000 planetesimals, and they showed that when you include the gas drag forces, the perturbations of B on the disk are not substantial enough to cause collision velocities to be so large that collisions become disruptive. So they showed, again, within the region of the disk we have been using, because John used it for the solar system, you can get planetesimals from.
What does five-dimensional mean? First line, 5,000 planetesimals, the last word in parentheses.
Oh, two-dimensional. Two-dimensional simulations.
All right, thank you.
okay, so what we did, Alpha Cent, you know the star masses. We're not varying the disk because there's just too big a parameter space. So one thing that we did decide to vary, we looked at, is the disk in the same plane as the stars? And we looked at planar, 15 degree tilt, 30 degree tilt, actually 45 degree tilt, 60 degree tilt, and 180 degree tilt, retrograde. We looked at a bunch of different systems just shifted by 1 meter to sample the chaos. The wide binary integrator we integrated for 200 million years, and then if we thought that two planets were too close to each other, too eccentric, that they were going to do something, two planets, we continued it for as long as a billion years. It just, you know, we took it out of the oven. If it didn't look baked, we put it back in. So this is basically schematic. No, that's your model's house. Hal was talking about his half-baked models. So this is, the fonts work on this one. Alpha Centauri, planar disk, what one would expect. By planar means the mid-plane is the same plane as the binary system. Start out, things get excited, and you get big bodies growing away, and you get a system that looks sort of like the solar system within 200 million years. And, of course, you got five planets in Alpha Centauri. But you have little problems with chaos. And you move one of the smaller bodies 1 meter along its orbit. Don't even change its orbital period at the beginning. And lo and behold, instead of five, you have three bodies. Well, they're fairly eccentric. So you can get this distribution of outcomes. But in general, when you have this no inclination system, the character, if you look at very statistical measures on the distribution of the systems from the uninclined disk, from the 15 degree disk, from the 30 degree disk, the systems look like systems within our solar system with the giant planets. The binary companion in Alpha Centauri has about the same effect on the late stages of the terrestrial planet formation process as Jupiter and Saturn do within our own solar system. Then you do 45 degrees and basically you get COSIDE. You get a lot of material thrown in to the star. There's just not as much angular momentum perpendicular to the plane of the star system, which is what's being quasi-conserved in here. And so you get one planet, which is pretty close in, and a little bit of stuff further out. You do 60 degrees, and you get a more severe problem. One not that big planet, pretty close in. 180 degrees, and you're back. In fact, you have, if you look at the 180 degree systems, they are like our solar system, but they're a little bit towards the area of no companion. Because in that case, because planetoids are going around the opposite direction from the companion, there's less of a dynamical coupling. And so it's as if the companion were further away or smaller or just has less effect on the process. And this is our final systems plot, because I don't want to show you each system. What this is, as a function of semi-major axis, the size of the circle is proportional to the size of the final body. The vertical error bar is the radial excursion due to the eccentricity of the orbit. The horizontal error bar is the vertical motion due to the inclination of the orbit. And the funny little arrow sticking out is the direction of the rotation. Because we're assuming perfect accretion, we're getting rotation velocities which are way too fast, rotation rates way too fast, periods too short, so we don't even try to get the speed of the rotation in these graphs. But you have the solar system, 0 degrees, you have the same type problem. You have your typical 0, 15, 30. You're getting three, four, five planets. So we're right in the middle. You have the same problems that you have with our own solar system, that they're too dynamically hot and that the mass is spread over too wide a region. It's not as concentrated in those two close together middle planets as it is in our actual system. 180 degrees, you see, again, as I mentioned earlier, you have a little bit more spreading out to here because you don't have quite as much of an effect of the perturbing star. And then you have these high inclinations, and they look very different. You can have systems around Alpha Centauri B, and what you're doing is you have a slightly smaller central star, a slightly bigger perturber, not much difference because it's only a small amount. You get this, the other system look just fine. This is a little bit anemic because you have a slightly bigger perturber. Again, statistical. This one is more than just a little bit anemic because you have the bigger perturber. This one fits in with the distribution. So you just move the distribution over, but there's still considerable overlap. And here is the set of the final outcomes for Alpha Centauri B. So for Alpha Centauri system, 3 to 5 terrestrial planets around Alpha Centauri A. Most of the mass stays in the disk. You don't throw away a lot of material, just like in simulations of the solar system, similar to the solar system, except when you have these high inclinations. So the bottom line is, it seems like terrestrial planets like our own solar system may exist in Alpha Centauri, but you have these multiple star systems. Are you going to have life in these multiple star systems? Well, for life, you need water. And for water, you need to have material in a region where water can condense and then be brought in. And from models of the solar system, delivery of volatiles to Earth, things that Morby and John and Chambers and others have done, you need things in the asteroid belt type region, that type of distance, but that is unstable in the Alpha Centauri system. So unless those stars came in pretty late on, you couldn't have formed planetesimals there, so it might be planets like Earth, but dry. Anyway, artists like this. Let's move on to close binaries. Around two bodies, mass ratio, equal bodies, or 4 to 1, same integration time, same philosophy, except we're not doing many tilts. Very close binary, just a Jupiter, no Saturn. You get 6 terrestrial planets and a planetesimal. You get more bodies than in any other simulations. So he said, oh, well, maybe the close binary is, this was the first one we ran. The close binary must be destroying all the secular resonances, and therefore you can have more planets. And, well, you know the old story. This is the second run. Instead of 6, you get 4. And it's all, you know, whatever you happen to get. So this is one that includes Saturn, and now you just get 3. And you get another run with Saturn. Well, now you get 5. So you have to do several of these, and then just look at the statistics, look at the distribution, and see where the differences are. You increase the semi-major axis. Clearly, you got the things really close together, unless it was something weird like secular resonances. The two bodies, it wouldn't be matter if the material was in one star or two. If they're far enough apart, they're going to cause mayhem. The planetesimals are going to cause enough chaos by themselves, so the stars don't have to cause the chaos. But the question, so qualitatively, we have a pretty good idea of the answer. But quantitatively, where this boundary occurs is really the goal of this, and whether it depends mostly on the apoapse in the case of a very close binary, or peri in the case of a wide binary. But again, this system, now you got something really very, very different. You don't get that in the distributions. So this is enough to do things at times, but in other cases, you don't have much effect. Now this is a little bit larger semi-major axis, but zero eccentricity. Again, you're not doing much. Here you have a 4-to-1 mass ratio among the stars. Again, it's not that big an effect relative to a single star. Now you get bigger semi-major axis and continue with a moderate eccentricity. You're creating a fair amount of havoc. But even there, you can get a system which is not that different from our own system. This is sort of anemic, but within the type distribution you get around single stars. Even with a semi-major axis of 0.2, now this has zero eccentricity, you can get a fairly calm system. This is a very calm system. Looks quite like our solar system. In fact, it's a little bit calmer in terms of number of planets. But you put up to 0.5 and whoa, that's very much not like our solar system. And even with eccentricity of zero, you get up to 0.4 semi-major axis and you've got something very much cleared out in the center. And here it's even more cleared out. You just have one real planet left. And here, one real planet and even further away. So, as you can tell, if you're still awake at this late hour, we've got planetary systems, and if you can tilt yourself on your side, you can get, this is another plot, and this is again the fact that on my computer this turned out to be rotated in the right sense, but just like the fonts, this is PowerPoint poisoning. Anyway, we've got single stars and multiple stars, and we've got distribution. When we get up to higher semi-major axis, higher eccentricities, we've got something that's a little bit different from what we've got in our own solar system, because this area is cleaned out with these 0.2, this is with apo at 0.3 and very eccentric, or apo, or well, circular orbit at 0.4. And in these cases, they all pretty much look, there are at least some for each parameter system, which is consistent, which overlaps with our own solar system. So we look at a bunch of statistics. I've been just showing you the look and feel of the system. You say, oh, how many planets, where the outer one or inner one is, etc. But we do have a bunch of statistics which we use to compare the number of planets bigger than Mercury, the small bodies, fraction of total mass in the largest planet, and this concentration statistic in Earth. Half the mass is in our solar system, half of it's in Earth, and most of the rest is in Venus, which is in a very close orbit. Spacing statistic, again, we have PowerPoint incompatibility. Made on a Mac to another Mac, this is Microsoft. The angular momentum deficit, how hot the system is. And this is fairly conserved in our own solar system. It's not conserved for all systems because there's so much more AMD in the giant planets. You can get a system with the body further out or with near resonance with one of the giant planets, and you can get things that aren't that well conserved. This is the concentration statistic that's very different from, this is the one in addition to the AMD that's the hardest to reproduce for any of the systems. You really need to start with a narrow annulus and grow the planets in order to get this statistic. Although with the Mars end, you can toss things out by Jupiter and cut things off there. Radial mixing, this is the provenance for material. and getting junk from Mars mixed in to form Earth. PowerPoint poisoning. So anyway, close binaries, low semi-major axis, small semi-major axis, low eccentricity, you get systems that look like the systems modeled in the solar system case, more than the solar system. So we assume that if we put in what we need to put in to damp things to get our solar system right, you get things like our solar system. Binary stars with more eccentric orbit can wreak more havoc, produce fewer planets, sometimes bigger, unless they're really wreaking havoc, in which case they're removing a lot of material. And planetary accretion, you get too big eccentricity and or semi-major axis. And this work is in progress, so I've been fairly conservative in my statements here. We'll have some better numbers later on. But again, we're talking about characteristics of the distribution. And these things take 1 to 2 months per run on fairly fast workstations. So it's hard to get real large statistical ensembles. And let's see, we have two papers published. There's a short article that's been submitted to Mexican Astronomy for Peter Bodenheimer birthday conference. Close binary simulations were almost done, and we've started to do a bunch of different wide binary systems to look over that parameter space in more detail. Thank you.
Questions?
Jack, have you looked at the long-term stability of these systems you create in the binary systems?
Not yet. Well, we have not looked. We have integrated some of the systems for a billion years, and that's fairly long-term stability.
Yes, I have a question concerning your starting point of the calculations. You start with planetary embryos already present.
Yes.
But they need to form already in a binary system. And I remember there was a calculation by Andy Nelson some years ago where he studied a binary system sort of similar to yours with SPH code. He had two disks, so this was two stars with two disks around them that were just orbiting each other. And he estimated from this calculation that the star, when it comes close to the secondary star, when it comes close to the first star, creates such strong perturbances in the disk, which are periodic, that you are very unlikely to condense particles into planetesimals from the very first beginning. So this may be the process where, and he estimates from that calculation that it's more difficult, definitely, to make planetesimals in the first place in such a circumstance. Do you have any comments on that?
Qualitatively, it's going to be more difficult, but there are going to be regimes which are slightly more difficult, and there are regimes where it's going to be impossible. And there are calculations which state that these regimes, it works. It is controversial. It's also controversial how much binary stars change from binaries parameters can change in the first few million years between planetesimal formation and the stage that we model. So we're looking at a well-defined problem. I think it is applicable to a lot of systems. If it's really bad and planetesimal formation is very difficult in some of these systems, then it's applicable to a much narrower range where the binary parameters change during that epoch, the time difference.
Right. This is a comment to what Willy said and the question as well. There is a system fairly similar to Alpha Centauri, which is Gamma Cephei. There are two stars, and simulations by Erkel Longyear shows that all orbits beyond 3 AU are chaotic and unstable. But in that system, there is a giant planet at 1 AU from one of the two stars. So does anybody have any idea of what happened there? It might get there from where?
Yeah, well, no, I mean...
Well, maybe Deborah knows that better than me. I think it's comparable to this one. The star is at 25 AU and the periastum is at 10 AU, something like that. Is that true? Yeah, 2.14, okay. But the stability limit, I believe, from conference that was presented last year at the meeting in Budapest is 3 or 3.5 AU, beyond nothing
so. It's well within the stability limit, but if you didn't...
No, problem with
so this
origin and migration.
Suggest, well, but that... So you're forming a giant planet. This is not related necessarily to this talk, except I could use it as evidence that you form planetesimals.
Yeah,
at that
you
region.
Can use evidence, but...
Yeah, well, would you agree with Alan Boss?
Be careful. Everything you say is recorded.
I can't...
And one thing that'll be possible to verify, perhaps, over the next couple of years is not so much the predictions about where these planets might form, but these arguments about the planetesimals going away in the outer parts of the disk due to the influence of a perturbing binary companion. One of the things we will get with Spitzer is an idea of how much dust is there in sort of the equivalent of a Kuiper belt for a large variety of binaries. Mm-hmm. And that is very much a focus of a number of the programs. So as people start running their codes, you know, don't throw those planetesimals out, understand which ones went away, and start trying to generate, you know, some models that show what is the truncation of these disks as a function of the various binary parameters. There are a number of programs really focusing on that.
Well,
so we could start to validate some of these ideas early on.
The real question is that we've been looking at the fundamental thing is, if you have stable orbits, in regions where you have stable orbits, can you have growth? Is the region of growth almost all the stable orbits, or are a lot of stable orbits not allowing growth? You can get various interpretations of the data of dust in terms of planetesimals. They're not growing there, as opposed to, if you don't have dust there, is it because it's formed into big bodies or because it's been cleared out? But still very valuable data. Greg?
Andrew's closest, sir.
Greg and Rory.
Yeah, I have a question for Jack and a question for Willie. And the work on planetesimal formation in binaries, what was assumed there about how planetesimals are made?
Well, as it was not my calculation, I just have to refer what I know out of my head, and people may correct me here. I think this was an SPH calculation, where there was in one disk 60,000 particles. It included viscous heating and some cooling for the evolution of the disk, and you just had the binary, I think it was in that case on 60 astronomical units separation and something 0.3, 0.5 eccentricity as well. And he just calculated the temperature evolution in the disk. And from that evolution alone, because you have these very strong shock waves, he estimated that it may be more difficult to condense these materials under such conditions, because you have periodic heating there when the binary comes in, and this will continue for many, many orbits. I mean, the disk may eventually, as Jack said, also go away, and so we might have different conditions during the evolutionary time of the binary.
Yes, but
no. You just have to, it's Andy Nelson, I think it's a couple of years ago. Yeah.
Okay.
the obliquities of the spin axes seem pretty large. Is that because the body is accreting, or is that a sign that they're too hot, or?
That's what is the case for the simulations of the solar system tip. They seem, to the extent we can tell, random. The only way to create a substantial ordered component is if you have preferential accretion from the outer edges of the feeding zone. And you do statistical measures of the solar system, and you can prove with beyond a shadow of a doubt that planetary obliquities are not random. On the other hand, you get rid of Jupiter and Saturn because they're gas flows which produce the ordered accretion. You get rid of tidally damped Venus and Mercury, and you get, then you say that, oh, Mars is just happens to be like Earth, but it, we know it's chaotic and it goes up to 60 degrees on fairly short time scales, and your statistics aren't so good anymore. Ask Luke about it. It's could be all random for the solid bodies.
Yeah, I was wondering, is Kepler going to shed any light on binary systems, or are those thrown out of the target list?
No. Binaries, that's a good question. Binaries are in the Kepler target list. Signal to noise drops by up to a factor of two, or, well, roughly a factor of two for equal luminosity. But they're fine. Yeah.
And I guess to follow up on that, if you have something out at, say, 15 AU, is the eclipse timing screwed up for period to period?
No. It's we have to be careful of it if it's right near the stability range.
So if you have something out at 20 AU, then, I mean, within your folding, it's within the year is the same to within an hour every year. Is that right?
Yeah, and it's not only, yeah, it has to be, the year has to be the same for 2 years or 3 years in a row. And
okay, so if it's precessing,
it is relevant, and yeah, we do need to put in a little bit of a variability to do that, but it has to be pretty precise, because it's within, you know, 5 hours or so, it's okay. And that's a pretty big perturbation for some. There isn't that large a zone in which your year changes from 1 year to the next by a tenth of a percent, and you're still stable for billions of years.
To fold, you need to have it much less than a tenth of a percent.
No, the duration of eclipse is a tenth of a percent of the year. And the centroiding of the eclipse isn't good to within better than a few hours for terrestrial type planets.
It looked like on your circumbinary disks with a Jupiter that you formed some Earth mass planets at 2 or 2.5 AU, but you didn't do that around a single star. Do you have any ideas how that might have happened?
Well, we did some circumbinary disks without Saturn, and some of the first ones. And then you also have the stochastic effects of just a little bit further out. Whether secular resonances become important, it's not clear that we have the statistics. Those are things that we are looking at, and that might be an effect. We'll just have to look at it carefully. There's just so much overlap between these distributions. It is tricky.
Well, the new six is clearly important. Solar systems don't have
it. Without Saturn.
Right.
When you don't have, and you have it all fouled up without, when you put in a binary, even with Saturn, you have everything moved around and much weaker secular resonances. They said that's what we thought, but then we put in that, if that is the real difference, then what we'll see is that if you have Jupiter but not Saturn, it doesn't matter if you have a close binary, But if you have Jupiter and Saturn, it does matter.
Did you see planets switching from the star you started around them to the star, the wide binary companion?
No. And it would be virtually impossible. Well, first of all, our code wouldn't handle it.
Right.
But secondly, unless we had a disk around the companion, there's no, the second burn is almost impossible. The second burn, the rocketry second burn to make it bound to the other star, because it would essentially have to be ejected from one star at a small v infinity or just below.
You can
below.
Imagine transferring near the Lagrange point, though.
Yeah, you could do that with gas, but you're not going to do that with big particles very often. It'll happen in reality very, very, very rarely, unless you throw into the other disk, and the other disk can slow you down. But even there, you're talking about a pretty small percentage of the ejected material.
Yeah. I'd like to ask a question about the Fermi paradox. Do you care to comment on the mathematical skills that a civilization on Alpha Centauri would develop trying to formulate a calendar?
There's no water there. How are you going to get in? It's hard to have mathematical skills if you don't form non-water-based, non-carbon-based life. And I don't know how they do arithmetic. Right, and we have 2 minutes for questions, and then we go to the one.
I just have a comment towards what Willy is saying about Fermi planetesimal binary systems. So actually, Jack cited this paper by Shho and another person, I forgot what's the
name. Mazzari.
Mazzari and Shho, where they actually show if you put in gas drag in the disk, which is surrounding one of the stars in the binary system, there are actually special places where the material likes to collect, and the gas drag sort of dissipate them and put them in that special location, and that enhance the local density and much easier to form planetesimal. So that may be one way actually binary actually helps.
And let me add that that group did a simulation of the late stages of terrestrial planet formation that was published a few months after our, so it was basically contemporaneous. And their results are consistent with ours, but they varied their disks. And so it wasn't as useful for insight of the effect of the binary. It was showing what was possible around the binary as opposed to the effect of the binary on the distribution for the same disk.
I don't have a question for Jack, but I have an announcement for tomorrow. I have been drafted to run tomorrow's session. And what I propose to do is move everybody up. Is anybody have any objection to that? Martin, you would be then at 9 o'clock. And is Renu here? Is to be before the break, then after the break? To have your talk before the break tomorrow morning instead of after the break? Okay.
Well, I was going to suggest that maybe Ichiro follows Martin quite well.
Okay.
The same subject, and then
till last.
At the same, and then move Shiguro into the fourth spot.
I would say leave Shiguro where he is and get out earlier tomorrow.
No, why not have four talks tomorrow? I mean, it's
because we're still not 100% sure about Adam Shulman. We have a little communication at this point.
I see. Okay.
So it was my problem. It was my problem. This communication problem.
Okay, so now the way that our leader has decided to go is Martin first, Atro second, Renu third, and Shiguro fourth. Is Shiguro here? Does everybody understand? Okay. Okay, so we'll do that.
Do you have a question?
Can I just make one last comment about the site? I was going to say that binaries may be more strongly perturbed by field star incoming. And especially in a clustering environment, could this have some dynamical implications on survival?
There are two types of binaries. The very close binaries, that's probably no. The second set that I was showing, formation around the pair of stars. When you're talking about the wider stars, then yes, it could. And it could, as I said, even if you can't, you might form planetesimals around a disk and then change the star system and form planets around it later.
Okay, why don't we stop at this point, thank Jack again for his talk, and adjourn to wine and cheese. But before we go to wine and cheese, sir.
Okay, I just wanted to give you the results of our highly scientific polling process. So here's the poll. We had 25 respondents. This is what the theoretician's view of the world is. Choose your favorite statistic, but it's about 10% of stars are likely to have a terrestrial planet according to this august body. And it's got a pretty well-defined mean on that, sigma mean. And here it is with the names. In about 10 or 15 years, come and talk to me about what the right answer is. You'll get your TPF observing time. We have your names. We know where you live.
It's a high binomial score.
That's the spread. Yeah, actually, some people put in a spread, so that's what that indicates. Time for one.
I think you're all here.